Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, Anna.
If country borders and grids can fascinate you, and state names intrigue you, if atlases, globes, city plans, subway maps, and of course, world maps are your thing, if you can name the capital city of Namibia, and if you get giddy about flags, you are in the right place. This is Map Corner, a podcast about the love of maps brought to you by Royfield Brown and Claire Asprey. Now, on with the show.
Hello and welcome. This is Map Corner. I'm Royfield Brown, who is in the great wilds of southern Ontario in Canada. And with me is the brains, the beauty. It's Claire Asprey. Where are you today, Claire?
Once again, I'm in Swindon at 51.6 degrees north and 1.8 degrees west.
Map Corner is the podcast dedicated to the love of maps and to all things cartophilic. So if Betas is your projection, you're in the right place.
And this month, we're following up a great suggestion from Nick Roworth. We're talking to Monique and Larry, the father-daughter team from the latest season of the BBC Race Across the World. They traverse Canada by land, and they're here to tell the tales.
Hi, everyone.
Hey, everyone. How are you doing?
We have bona fide TV celebs in the house. I don't know about you, Claire, but I'm beside myself with excitement. Now, folks, before we speak to this wonderful father and daughter duo, we have an audio postcard from Mike Parker, who was actually with us last month, and he's the map addict who's musing on borders. Now, don't forget to review us on Apple Podcasts. You lot, you've been slacking. The listeners of this podcast, they've been remiss recently. We haven't had any reviews, so we need those reviews. It's really important because it helps get the podcast up those podcasting charts.
So once again, we're live on Zoom with Map Corner listeners all around the world. And if you want to join in with the next podcast recording, join the Facebook group, get the details of the next show. And if you're not on Facebook, send us a message on Twitter to ask for a link. And now it's time to talk to our special guests, Monique and Larry. Welcome to Map Corner. Tell us a bit about why you wanted to race across the world.
I think it was my decision. I watched the previous series. And me and Dad, we're very competitive and we love challenges. And we also I love going on holidays. So I thought, merge the two together and Dad indulges things that I asked for. And it was like, yeah, why not? Let's get involved. Let's see if we can do it. And one thing led to another. And we ended up on the show. We ended up racing across Canada.
Fantastic. How does she really get everything she wants, Larry?
Not exactly, but when it comes to twisting her father's arm and wiggling around me, she's very successful at that, always has been.
That sounds to me like it's an unqualified yes, then, basically. How does the casting process work? Because it's one thing to say you want to do this, but how do they make sure that you have the mental fortitude to not only be able to do the task, but also to put up with each other?
The casting process is pretty long-winded, and I think two series in, they're pretty adept at finding what type of people they want on this entertainment show. And it is an entertainment show at the end of the day. It's there to entertain people, factual entertainment. They know the type of people that they want in there. They know the type of drama that they want to be able to create. And people's backstories will always have something that they might want to focus or feature on, the relationships between each of the peers and everything else like that. But there is that element of protecting contributors, the psychological safety that's involved in it. They do background checks. You do speak to psychologists. They do repeatedly ask you, are you sure you want to do this? Are you prepared for the things that may happen? And most people are going to turn out and say yes. You'll only know how you're going to handle it once you're actually in those situations. It is a factual entertainment show. It is there to entertain people. And besides the adventures that we go on, the highs and the lows, they will make a program that is entertaining for people.
We are a Mac podcast. When you were traveling, you didn't have any phones. You didn't have any credit cards. You had a paper map and an envelope of cash. How important was that paper map? Or how much were you relying on talking to people who could look stuff up on their phones? Because I know there's some of that goes on.
Yeah, it was really important. I think me and Dad were quite lucky. So we opened our map and it wasn't raining. So that was good. But I know some other pairs, it got destroyed during the journey. Because you are literally just relying on that paper map, like you said, wind, rain, if you lose it, if you put your bag somewhere, and they don't give you another one, that is sort of it. So the map becomes almost like your travel Bible in a way. Like, you don't want to damage it, you don't want to lose it. But yeah, it was really important. I don't look at paper maps. I use my phone all the time. Most of us do. But you figured out how to like measure distance as well. So we know that instead of measuring the distance, we'd measure it by hours. So a finger and a bit was 2 hours of driving. It was really weird how you adapted and learned to work with the tools that you did have. But obviously talking to other people along the way, we would ask for directions or ask them to look at their phone when we got into like smaller cities like Toronto, because obviously the big map only tells you so much. It doesn't tell you about certain roads and things like that. So I learned quite a lot, actually. I don't think I'd used the map before then.
I'm old school. As I said, I embrace my maturity. I used to travel around London with an A to Z maps, and you just learn, memorize things in ways that you travel. But the map itself, it gave you Canada, and it is so vast. So when we opened that Ordnance Survey map, it was huge. It will fill a wall of your house quite easily. It was massive. So the vastness of it all was like a bit, oh my God, it really is that big. And then after a while, we stopped trying to measure with all my little thumb is about 500 kilometers. It was just like that. Everything is determined by time. How many hours? Is it 16 hours? Is it 36 hours? Is whatever. And that is the way that you navigate your way.
How isolated did you truly feel on the journey, considering that you have a camera crew with you?
Yeah, there is an embed crew with you. It's not a massive camera crew. It's nothing like you see the TV productions of Downton Abbey or something like that. It is a cameraman, the assistant producer, sound man, a runner, a medic, a driver, and that's it. So there's no more than five people around you at all times, or most of the times. Isolated? No, not really. Because you are always traveling, you are always meeting new people, you are always having that interaction with local people in order to get information. So you're not in the middle of the wilderness and it's just myself and Mon. You've obviously got people around you. So you don't feel that sense of isolation. What I do think you feel a sense of, though, is how much the modern world has changed the way that the normal person travels, because I can tell you now, not having a plastic card is like crazy. You can't book hotels, you can't book anything. So you have to turn up on the day and hope that people take cash. But you haven't got your phone, so you haven't got the instantaneous information that you require or need. It's not there. All of those things are taken out of your control. And so, yeah, it's challenging in that way. But isolation, no. We went to some remote places, but I wouldn't say we were isolated.
The way that we travelled, where we didn't have technology, you can't feel isolated because you're forced to talk to locals, you're forced to talk to other people. Whereas if we had our phones and we were doing it ourselves, it probably would have just been me and Dad looking at our phones and figuring it out. But you're almost forced into this situation where you're relying on the kindness of other people. So I don't think you can ever feel isolated.
Yeah, that's something that I was thinking about, that the more I watch those programs, the more people go on, the more they recognize that they depend on the kindness of strangers. And I think I've seen that across all three seasons of Race Across the World, that people start and they want to be quite independent. And then by the end, they're just like literally asking any random person for anything that they need and finding that on the whole respond comparatively well. I guess it doesn't hurt to have a camera crew with you, but I don't know how much difference I make. I mean, I know that there are frustrating times, and particularly in Canada, where there's a lot of hitchhiking, isn't there, and ride sharing, there's a huge amount of dependence on other people.
Yeah. And I think that helped because Canadians are already used to that within Canada. People hitchhike, and you don't really get that in London or even Essex. So people are naturally more receptive to it as well, camera crew or not.
The camera crew and the kindness of strangers and the logistics of it. Now, Osgoorn really struck on various legs. You had to generate income as well as traveling. So, you know, when you're working in the hairdressers or you do some kind of casual job, how did that truly come about?
So we have a guide, and in the guide, there are jobs that we're able to pick. So that's one way. Or you, like, I think, I can't remember what episode it was, but it was towards the end where I just struck up a conversation with a guy and a coach, and he was like, oh yeah, I've got a mate that owns a pizza / pub place, and he's probably looking for work, so you guys can pick up a shift there. That wasn't staged or set up. It really was me just having a conversation with a guy, and people just being genuinely nice and wanting to help you. I think when you told people what you were doing, people really got involved, and they wanted you to get to where you were going. And even if they couldn't provide accommodation, that people wanted to help in whichever way possible. So yeah, some jobs came about just by having conversations with people, and others were in a guide that was given to us at the beginning of each leg.
Now, I'm in Canada right now, so don't misconstrue what I'm about to ask you. It's a lot of nothingness in the middle of Canada, isn't there? Now, was this nothingness in the middle of Canada, was it awe-inspiring, or did you go, blooming out, it's a bit flat? There's not much in this great dominion. Come on, be honest.
I think there was. Go on, Dad.
I think there are times where it's like, oh, there's another field. Oh, there's another forest. Oh, there's another mountain. However, the views are spectacular, and I think you seek out places and things that, even though you're in the middle of nowhere, there is always something that is out of the ordinary that I certainly haven't experienced before, or Monique hasn't experienced before. So the guides that we have in terms of the jobs would eke out something really like strange for you. And it's just like, oh, that's interesting. Maybe we should go over there. But there is large, vast areas of the same thing. Like the journey to Churchill was like, okay, we're on the train. And it's a seriously long train ride, and it's seriously uncomfortable. And you are just seeing trees, permafrost, smaller trees, shrubs, a couple of logs, a couple of them, the telephone poles that have been there since 18, whatever. And that could be for hours. That could be for hours. So it's like, okay, then we've seen that, and we've seen more of it. But in saying that, even though the place is vast and there is just places that go on forever, there is always something hidden somewhere that would be of interest.
How many games of I Spy did you play in the course of the whole?
You know what? It's funny you say that. Luckily, I think Claudia bought Uno, so that was quite nice. But yeah, you were either writing in your diary because everyone bought a journal, or people started swapping books. I think me, Zaynab, Claudia, we all swap books around. So you find ways of entertaining yourself.
You started off in Vancouver. Were you truly in it to win it? Or did you say, you know what, dad, daughter, let's just have a bit of a nice jolly? Now, how competitive were you really when you set out? Or did competitiveness ramp up when you're in the last leg and your crumbs were still in it?
Me and dad, I were very competitive. So we always went in it thinking, yeah, we're going to win. We're going to win. We need to win. We're going to get to the end. We're going to win. Dad comes from a sports background. He's still in sports now with his job. And I played sports growing up, like netball, athletics, horse riding, gymnastics, dance. The competition is embedded in both our lives. Not in a nasty way, but it was a healthy competition. So I don't even think it was about the money. We just wanted to win. We're so competitive. So I think that was always in the back of our mind. But then when you're on the journey, you start to appreciate other things, and it doesn't just become about just winning. You appreciate the things that you're taking in and the opportunity that you have, because obviously not a lot of people get to do what we've done. So I think just the fact that I'd done the journey with Dad in itself was something so special, and winning, I would have done the journey again knowing I wouldn't win 10 times over. So you appreciate things differently when you're on the race.
You've got a place to get to. You've always got a new destination to get to. So what are some of the things that, if it hadn't been for the race, you would have taken a detour to do? What are the things you wish you want to go back to Canada and experience because it wasn't really en route?
There was a few places. So I've never been to Toronto, and I really wanted to go to Niagara Falls. But because of the timing, we didn't get to do it. And I thought, at the beginning, I was thinking, we're in Canada, we're at least going to see Niagara Falls, and that's what the wonders of the world and whatever. But we didn't get to do it. And that's a shame, because you are in a race at the end of the day. So as much as you're taking lots of things in, you have to think, we've got to get a bus in the next 5 minutes. And if I want to continue this journey, I'm not going to necessarily get to be able to do the things that I'd necessarily seeked out to do. It's the same with Claudia. I think she really wanted to see Lake Louise.
Yeah, there are lots of things that I would still want to see with inside of Canada. But yeah, going to Niagara Falls with Monique would have been absolutely awesome. You want to be able to go out onto the water in Lake Michigan. Wow. In Whistler, you want to go skiing or something like that. To go, it's these things that we just can't do it. We're inside. This is our journey. This is our point. But in saying that, though, the checkpoints that we were at, the places that we went to, Haida Gwaii, Churchill, Manitoulin Island, which I knew nothing about, and it blew my mind, an island in an island. Yeah, crazy. Brilliant places that we went to, besides not getting to things that you would really want to see.
So you had this trip of a lifetime, and you're now bona fide celebrities. I'm still pinching myself that I'm on a Zoom with you both. But it's all about the metaphorical and the literal journey, or the literal and the metaphorical. Let's put it in that way around. So there must be a few things that you discovered about each other, and a few things you'd rather wish you hadn't discovered about each other.
So for me, one of the motivations of being able to do this with my daughter was to spend that time with her as an adult. I'm never, ever going to get that time again. Let's be honest about it. She's growing. She'll have a family. She'll have a job. She'll do whatever. And I won't have that concentrated time with my daughter as what I have had in the past when she was a child. So for me, that's the kind of like things that I was like, wow, brilliant opportunity. Here's an opportunity for me to impart some information, some life skills, things that, subtle nuances of life that you need to equip yourself with as an adult. So here's a great opportunity. So you say that, oh, are there things that I discovered about it? I already knew my daughter, but it was just really reaffirming and reassuring to see she really is quite brilliant. She's resilient. She will get on with things. She will get things done. Even though she doesn't like it, she'll get it done. And it was great to see that, and to see how ultimately leaving this, I just can say that, what if I disappear from the earth tomorrow, my daughter's going to be all right. She's going to be fine. And for me, that was one of the greatest takeaways from it. Did we get on each other's nerves on there? No, not really. That's not our relationship.
Wait a minute. But that's a two-way opinion to have. Let me ask Monique. Did you always categorically not get on each other's nerves?
We didn't get on each other's nerves. However, when you're in situations, when you're tired, you're hungry, I think you are just a bit more irritable sometimes. For example, it wasn't aired, but I think we've spoken about it before. Dad wanted some oranges, and I was like, no, Dad, you can't have oranges. We've got a tight budget. And he had to put the oranges back. So little things like that, it's nothing to argue about. But it's just like little small things. Or I think you got a coffee once, Dad, and I was like, why have you got a coffee, Dad? What have you gone and done that for? And you were like, do you want one? I was like, no, Dad, I don't want a coffee. I needed a coffee. So it's like little things like that. But no, we didn't get on each other's nerves. It was absolutely fine. It was great.
So basically what I've determined from that is that your dad's a bit of a spendthrift, right? You're the one who's tight with the money, right? You were really like making things run on rails, but you had to watch him financially.
Yeah, I was the accountant. I had a notebook. I wrote down everything we spent to the cent. I was like, no, we are not going over budget. And if we did, we had to make up in other ways. So if that meant Dad couldn't have a coffee or an orange, it meant he couldn't have a coffee or an orange.
So basically, I could have ended up with scurvy.
on that cliffhanger that your father's health potentially was going to be imperiled by this trip, we need to have a brief little break and have an audio postcard. Audio, if you're listening to the podcast, of which the vast majority of people are, but the very special select group are watching this on Zoom. So they get the video postcard. This is from Mike Parker, who was with us last month, acclaimed BBC person, author. He knows a rather lot about the Welsh and the English border. This is his video postcard.
Where there's a map, there's a border. And it's true that often delineating borders are the very reason that some maps are created in the first place. And they just fascinate us, don't they? When I was writing my book, Map Addict, there's a chapter in there all about borders. And to research that, I took a six-week train trip, an interrail trip around Europe to visit some of its quirkier border corners. And one that stands out in my memory now is the town of Baarle. Now, Baarle is 5 kilometres into Holland from the Belgian border. But within the town, there are 21 exclaves of Belgium. And within those are 9 further counter-exclaves of Holland. So you have bits of the Netherlands, Holland, within bits of Belgium, within the Netherlands, which does all make for a very complicated sort of place. But it's fascinating, and it draws the crowds in like nobody's business. But the UK also has a stack of crazy and interesting borders as well. And for the past 4 or 5 years, I've been researching my recently published book, All the Wide Border, which is about one of them. And that's one of the oldest and the deepest on this island, namely the line between Wales and England. So it was an investigation of the border as a line on the map, as a line through history, but also as a line that goes through me and so many others, and a line through the concept of Britishness. There's so many quirky angles to the Welsh-English border. And of course, in the pandemic, when it really roared into life because of the different rules on either side, we saw things like the golf course in Llanymynech, where suddenly, you know, one half could play golf and the other half couldn't because the border goes down the middle of the golf course. Same thing in Chester Football Club, where the entrance and the bar are in England, but the pitch and the stand are in Wales, and that caused a few problems. Basically, the England-Wales border, as we know it today, the line on the map, was drawn up for the Act of Union of 1536, although based on much earlier assumptions of where the line was, of course, including Offa's Dyke from the 8th century. But the 1536 drawing of the map meant that, of course, there were some places that landed on the wrong side, so there were bits of Wales stranded in England and bits of England stranded in Wales. And you can still feel that even today, 500 years on. But the place I want to leave you with is a place which fell between the cracks. It was on neither one side nor the other. It's a place called Threpwood, a corruption of the words Thieves' Wood, which gives you an indication of its reputation. It was extra parochial, so completely out of the church jurisdiction. But being in neither Flintshire nor Cheshire, it also fell through the legal system so that no one could be tried there. And most importantly, as far as the politicians were concerned, nobody there was paying any taxes. So hardly surprisingly, it attracted all kinds of ne'er-do-wells. People who were attracted to it because of its very lawlessness. And amongst the gypsies and the military deserters and the bull baiters and cockfighters and gamblers and drinkers was one constituency of people that made Threpwood quite famous. And that was young, unmarried, pregnant women who were often kicked out of their more upstanding parishes, probably by the very blokes that got them pregnant in the first place. And they made their way to Threpwood, where there were houses situated across the common for their reception. This is an amazing story, I think, one that I'd never heard of before, that there was this kind of place of refuge there between England and Wales and what's now in Cheshire. And isn't that incredible? for the place of enforced and shameful exile actually became a place of rare and welcome sanctuary. That's the power.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Power of borders.
That was an awesome video postcard. Thank you, Mr. Parker, for that. Now is the time, good people in the audience, where you can actually speak to this internationally renowned father and daughter team. Monique, as you're walking the streets of Essex, do people just come up to you and just like high five you? You must have been recognised. It must be a daily occurrence now. This show is big stuff. My in-laws here in Canada were watching you. They said to me, who are you interviewing today? And when I told them, they went, the couple that have been going across Canada. I went, absolutely. You are intrepid explorers, but also celebrities. How does that feel?
I don't feel like a celebrity at all. I really don't. I just feel like me. But yeah, people do come up to me. When I was in Thailand about a month ago, people came up to me and said, oh, are you from Race Across the World? Blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, yeah, interesting you know me. And when I was at the theatre the other day, when I was at a Beyonce concert.
Beyonce came up to you.
I wish. I bloody wish. No, everyone's so nice. And I think the show's such a lovely show. Everyone's been so positive. So it's really nice speaking to people and getting such positive reactions and lovely support. So it's been great.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think I'm a celebrity. And if there is such thing, then I'm an E-list celebrity. But yeah, like Monique, people who do come up to in strange places like swimming pool changing rooms and things like that, and you feel a bit like vulnerable being just in your swimming trunks, but it is all positive. I haven't had any negative experiences or anything else like that. People are genuinely invested in the program and in myself and Monique as contributors. They feel that they actually know us, which is a bit strange because it's like they're looking at you and you're looking at them, and then it's like, oh my God, you're from Race Course. And it's like, yeah, it's something that I would never get used to.
Before everyone pitches in with a question, right. I know Ken's got one. I just wanted to ask a quick question because I was quite late to Race Across the World, and my friends were, in fact, Lou was on the course, were raving about it. So I binge watched all of the first two seasons and then started watching the third. And so then I had to slow down because I had to wait every week. But the thing that really struck me was like, I really felt for the production team in that second season because I cannot begin to imagine the health and safety and risk assessments that they were doing, lifting people out of South American countries. I'm like, Canada is beautiful, but it isn't noted for being a particular kind of world hotspot. And I can only imagine that they go, we're not going anywhere like that again. And like, from your conversations with the production team and your knowledge of the program, did they just pick someone they thought there's not going to be, like, the worst thing's going to happen is like polar bears or something? Did they go for somewhere politically calm, or was it just a random choice?
I don't know. That I think a lot goes into it. And obviously it was off our screens for 2 years because of COVID. And when we were filming, COVID was still very much a thing. So it's not shown, but everyone that we got lifts with had to take a COVID test. And I think there's a certain part in Canada which goes through Alaska, but we couldn't because of COVID testing and quarantining. So I think that was one of the big factors in this season. I do not know for next season or even the celebrity edition that they've got coming out, where we're not really told about the planning that goes into it. But I think they'd go to every country if they could. I don't know.
There is the security risk that you have to take into consideration. But as Monique said, it was just coming out of COVID. So if you are going to try to emulate the distances that previous series have done, then, you know, it's either going into Russia or going to Canada. I think I like the choice of Canada over Russia. Not to say that there wouldn't be anything wrong with Russia, but yeah, all of those things are taken into consideration. And they learn all the time from the various series that they do. Yeah, it must have been a consideration, and this was the only way that they could have done it successfully coming off the back of COVID. Now, the celebrity one, other series that they're going to produce will be totally different again.
Gotcha. Now it's time for questions from the gallery. Ken McDonald, you're up first, sir.
I've never seen this show, so this may be an ignorant question. But I take it you couldn't just get on an airplane in Vancouver and fly straight to St. John. How do they draw this out? How do they make this more of a game?
The premise is that you are given the equivalent airfare just about of going from Vancouver all the way over to St. John, but you cannot use a plane to travel. So you can use any other mode of transport by sea, bus, rideshare, cycle, walk, any other means of transport to get over there. And along the way, you have to go to various checkpoints, which they decide upon, yeah? So the checkpoints were, for us, it was Haida Gwaii, where we went from Vancouver Island to Haida Gwaii, then Haida Gwaii to, who's the next one? Dawson City.
In the Yukon, the fourth leg was Banff to Churchill, which you've talked about. Fifth leg. Was that wonderful island, Manawin Island in Ontario.
Absolutely. Anyway, that's the place that I want to retire to. But yeah, so you had to go to various checkpoints along the way. And to make it interesting as well, the money that you had, yeah, would run out very quickly because you have to pay for everything. Food, accommodation, bus fares, ferry fares, train fares.
Oranges.
No, it was no oranges. Thank you, Mum. It was no oranges. No citrus fruit whatsoever. You know, you have to spend your money on that. So your money can run out very quickly unless you've got an exceptional accountant or a Monique on your side. So, yeah, that's how the series is made interesting. And it's not like you can just go from taking off in Vancouver Island, hopping on a seaplane and then getting right the way over to Newfoundland.
But one of the things I remember from when my sister was having a year out in her teen was she was in Canada and she went across Canada, but she couldn't get a flight. And yet it was a lot cheaper to fly than go by any other form of travel. And she had this ridiculously long coach journey across a large swathe of Canada. And it would have been cheaper and a lot quicker to fly. And I think that's certainly true in this country and across a lot of Europe. You know, you can get to half of Europe for £20 on EasyJet if you're really minded to, can you? But yeah, you can barely get halfway up the road on that or in other forms of transport. So I think that must have been a particular challenge in Canada, particularly that kind of economy compared to translating that to some of the other routes that they've done before.
Yeah, that was a massive shock to me. I think we learned as we went along how vast Canada actually is. But we assumed that their public transport, especially, I don't know, Toronto or all the other smaller cities, it'd be frequent and it'd be affordable. But that wasn't the case at all. I think every time we'd done our little boxy pops and our little diaries, video diaries at the end of the day, Dad would be like, John Trudeau, you need to sort out the public transport. It's not great. And it really wasn't. I think they did have a bus service called the Greyhound, but that got shut down. So there was only one bus service that was running. And there were so many stories about why it got shut down. But I was thinking, I don't care how it got shut down. I just need to get to where I need to get to. So it was tough and it was very expensive. Even the food was expensive. Yes, it was very expensive.
There is a peculiar geography to Canada. And I could be slightly wrong here, but fundamentally correct. That 90% of the Canadian population lives less than 100 miles away from the American border. So fundamentally, you can only really comfortably travel east and west in Canada. But as soon as you start going north, that's where things get a little bit hairy, apart from the province of Alberta. And that's, dare I say, it's fundamentally what made it really quite interesting, because the population is so sparse as soon as you go north that there isn't the public infrastructure and public transport as you would have, let's say, even in the United States, which is dodgy for public infrastructure anyway, and because of the peculiar geography of Canada.
Yeah, most definitely. There was one leg, I think it was when we was in the Yukon, that was trying to work out that actually the population of the Yukon, you could fit in the Emirates Stadium, yeah? Arsenal Stadium, 62,500 or something like that. So you could fit the whole of the population of the Yukon with inside that stadium. And yet the Yukon is huge. It is vast. It is like you can fit Great Britain inside there three or four times. It's stupid. And it's like, if there's only that many people and you can, and it's the size of Great Britain times four, then us just meeting people is like a wonder. It's, oh, it's another person. So it really was interesting to know that, yeah, when you go north, there are not many people around. And therefore, that ride sharing, that helping out another person is quite common with inside those places. And so when you are going north with inside Canada, it's of, yeah, I'm going up to wherever today. Anyone need a ride? And that will be put out on social media for people to get ride shares to go X, Y, and Z. It's a thing. But yeah, it's sparse. Sparse.
Ronald, your question, sir.
Thank you. Number one, this is fascinating. Thank you so much. And then number two, maybe a question for Monique. Traveling with your father, what was the biggest benefit or perk? And the reason I ask, a few years ago, I did a road trip with my dad, father, and son through Central Europe as a pensioner. And it was amazing because they would let me cut through queues, etc., because I was with him. So I was curious about your take on it from your perspective, Monique. Thank you.
Thanks for the question. It's funny you said that, because obviously we're budgeting. And after a while, me and Dad cottoned on that we'd get cheaper bus tickets if we said Dad was a pensioner. So we started saying Dad was a pensioner. And he's got a grey beard, so it works. So we'd get cheaper tickets for Dad. So that was definitely one of the perks. And also just talking to people, I think Dad is more, I live on my phone, I'll admit, I live on my phone, but Dad is more well-traveled in life, I think. So just traveling with someone who has more life experience than me, I got to learn from Dad, and Dad would ask questions to people that I wouldn't even think of. Or if Dad could see that I was knackered and didn't want to talk, he'd still be talking to other people and getting information that I wouldn't necessarily think of. So I think each pair had their strengths, but I think one of my strengths was doing it with my dad, who is just a lot more well-traveled and a well-rounded person. My dad is just great. So I think I wouldn't have wanted to do the journey with anyone else, and him having a grey beard really did help us out.
Nina and family, you have the honour of asking the last question.
Hi, I'm Megan, and we all really enjoyed watching this series. I was wondering if you are planning or would like to go backpacking, traveling like that again, and if so, where would you like to go?
I love to travel. I would love to travel through South America, yeah, from the top, from Central America, going right away through, and then end up in Brazil somewhere. That would be my thing. Would I do it with a backpack? I'm not so sure. I mean, we had our adventures, but I am now of a vintage where comfort really does appeal to me. However, you know, if there was an opportunity to do a road trip in an RV with windows, yes, I could see myself doing something like that. I didn't think it was so. I thought that was quite cool, actually. But backpacking, I'm not ruling it out completely, but I do like my creature comforts.
Yeah, I think I have to second Dad with that. I love traveling. I've got a few places lined up this year. I think the next place I'm going to is Zanzibar. I'm doing a bit of Africa. But again, I think backpacking, it was so heavy. And I go to the gym, but honestly, it's a different type of heavy. It's insane. I think it took me a few years to want to do that again, but I love traveling, so I would go up and down anywhere, but I don't know if I'd do the whole backpacking thing. I've done it and it was great, but yeah, comfort is key.
Amen to that, sister. Now, we need to rattle through this. Claire, I could just talk to this pair and just say to hell with the rest of the show. I don't know about you, but I suppose...
It's already filling in Eric's application for the next series.
Nah, I'm so not. It's something I could not do, full stop. But let's go on to the next bit of the show. Claire, it is time for our quiz. Now, how fiendish are these questions this month?
Try to be a bit gentle in the quiz, as ever, it's in honour of our guests. And what I've done questions about random places which are stopping places. Some of them might not be so fiendish, but you know me, I think something isn't fiendish and it turns out that it is. Everyone, join in!
Now, the first question. The 4,645-mile Trans-Canada Highway runs through 10 provinces between Victoria and St. John's. How much of the route is rural? Is it A, 85%, B, 95%, or C, 97%? So the 4,645-mile Trans-Canada Highway runs through 10 provinces between Victoria and St. John's. How much of that route is rural? 85%, 95%, or is it 97%? Now, Laddie and Monique, there's a time on a tradition on this podcast that you play along with this as well. All right. So question number two, which are the only two ways into Churchill, Manitoba, known as the polar bear capital of the world? Which are the only ways into Churchill in Manitoba, which is also known as the polar bear capital in the world? Is it A, by air and sea, B, air and railway, or air and road? Which are the only two ways into Churchill in Manitoba, which is also known as the polar bear capital of the world? Air and sea, air and railway, or air and road? Question number three. How many US states share a border with Canada? A, 8, B, 11, or C, 13? How many US states share a border with Canada? Is it 8, 11, or 13? Question number four, what is the meaning of the name Mexico? Is it A, heart of the sun, B, navel of the moon, or C, foot of the mountain? What is the meaning of the name Mexico? Heart of the sun, navel of the moon, C, foot of the mountain. Question number five, how many stars feature on the flag of Panama? Is it A, 1, B, 2, or C, 4? How many stars feature on the flag of Panama? 1, 2, or is it 4? Question number six. Which country shares a border with Argentina across the Perito Moreno Glacier? Is it A, Bolivia, B, Brazil, or C, Chile? That question again. Which country shares a border with Argentina across the Perito Moreno Glacier? Is it A, Bolivia, B, Brazil, or C, Chile? Question number seven. The Caspian Sea is larger than Germany. What proportion of all of the lake water in the world does it hold? Is it A, 20 to 25%, B, 30 to 35%, or C, 40 to 45%? The Caspian Sea is larger than Germany. What proportion of all of the lake water in the world does it hold? Is it A, 20 to 25%, B, 30 to 35%, or C, 40 to 45%? And the last question is, in what country would you find the ancient site of Angkor Wat? A, Cambodia, B, Vietnam, or C, Laos? In what country would you find the ancient site of Angkor Wat? Is it in Cambodia, Vietnam, or Laos? There, good people, is your quiz questions.
It's the social media roundup.
Gosh, normally I'd flatter you by saying this is my favourite part of the show. It ain't. Talking to Monique and Laddie. You know, do we really need to go through this, Claire, when we have these bony Friday lovely people with us?
We can always dump it, but I'll just do a little bit of thanking to Nick Rowworth apart from anything else. Just a quick one on the social media roundup for the last month. Over on Twitter, it's been quiet, but one thing that I reposted, it's worth looking for on the hashtag MapCorner, is a map from the excellent Alistair Ray, who I often retweet because he does some amazing mapping stuff, where he's tried to split the UK into four equal parts with exact roughly the same population in each part. And what he basically has got is a sort of slightly off-centre quadrant with capitals, which he's picked are Edinburgh, Belfast, Oxford and Cambridge. There's a lot of discussion about the capitals. There's a lot of discussion about the locations, but it's quite a fun bit of mapping if you're trying to track and make exactly the same populations across all four quadrants. One to look for there. Over on Facebook, not happy just with having suggested our guests for today's show, Nick Rowworth has been excelling himself. And the very first podcast recording that we did online, he won a personalised OS map. And it was showing off a picture of it all framed on the wall. And then he also mentioned that a copy of the first Harry Beck underground map had recently sold. So he's not only did he win a map already, he's angling for someone to buy him that for his next gift. We now have to make Nick happy. Another one that I quite liked was from Peter Adams on our Facebook group, where it showed mapping of the sequencing of Viking DNA. Now, as a redhead, I take some interest in this, but actually, what was really interesting to me was how it showed kind of river tributaries and where they went inland. You could just see where the rivers were. It's quite cool. Now, following the audio postcard from last month, and this isn't going to mean anything to people who might hear this out of context, we've had some beautiful photos of bricks on the Facebook page. If you're into your interesting bricks, that's the place to look. And then Becky Eager on the other side of better, more decorated bricks took some photos in the map gallery in the Vatican, where there are huge map frescoes, some amazing bits of art there. And finally, one that I posted, which was a map of Europe indicating whether you're likely to be offered food when you visit somebody's house. Short answer is, go to the southern parts of the continent. The northern people are a lot less welcoming. And we had some discussions about what was an appropriate number of biscuits to offer when people came round for us to drop in. Have a look at the maps we're posting and you get the bin link for every time we record. Question one. The 4,645-mile Trans-Canada Highway runs through 10 provinces between Victoria and St John's. How much of the route is rural? Is it A, 85%, B, 95%, or C, 97%.
Monique, I'm going to you first. You say your father is much more well-travelled and worldly wise than you, so it might have more comedic value in just throwing all the questions to you because you might get them all wrong, right? So, so what do you think the answer is, A, B or C?
I'll be so honest. I travelled through Canada for 2 months. I haven't got Scooby-Doo, so I just went bang down the middle. I said B.
The answer is 97%. I would have said 97. Right.
Question number two is, which are the only ways into Churchill, Manitoba, known as the polar bear capital of the world? Now, you guys must know the answer to this one. It's either A, air and sea, B, air and railway, or C, air and road.
But why don't you answer this one, laddie?
B, air and rail.
That is correct.
I have a cousin who lives in Barrow in Alaska, and that is the furthest north town settlement, I think, in all of the North American continent, and you can only get there by plane. There's not even a road there. It's just bonkersly isolated. Anyway.
Question number three. How many US states share a border with Canada? Is it A, 8, B, 11, or C, 13?
Gosh. Monique, do you have a Scooby?
I really don't. You're really showing me up. I don't know.
As it a guess, you've got one in three chance of being correct.
A. Is it A?
And what do you reckon, Dad?
I went for 11 states order.
What's the correct answer, Miss Asprey?
I thought you'd have known this one, Royfield. This is like your...
I could go through and count them. I think... Oh, God. All right, let's do it from memory. Washington State, Idaho, Montana. What's going to come after Montana? Wisconsin. Michigan. Are we doing the Great Lakes actually as a border? This is a trick question, actually, thinking about it. All right, if we're doing it as the lakes actually as a border, so then after Michigan, you're gonna have New York State, Vermont, Maine. How many is that?
You're doing really well there, actually, Royfield. And there are 13. So C is your correct answer. And I'll read them along. Alaska. That's a pretty obvious one.
Alaska. I did the continental. Yeah.
New Hampshire, Vermont, New York, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Minnesota, North Dakota, Montana, Idaho,
North Dakota,
Washington, and Maine.
Oh, whatever. Anyway, but thank you for saying I did really well, even though I messed up. You've been
most of them.
What's the next question?
So the next question is, what's the meaning of the name Mexico? Is it A, heart of the sun, B, navel of the moon, or C, foot of the mountain?
Gosh. Let's put this one to you, Dad.
I went for foot of the mountain, but I'm now like thinking about it logically, and it could be heart of the sun. I'd put foot of the mountain. I'm going to be honest, foot of the mountain.
Okay, nice try, laddie, but heart of the sun was my kind of fool everyone wrong answer. It's actually navel of the moon. I don't really understand why. And also, why does the moon have a navel? None of this makes sense. And I think the only way you might have guessed this is it's so insane, I couldn't have made it up. Whereas heart of the sun, it feels like a really obvious one for a kind of sun-worshipping civilization. But yeah, it's actually B, navel of the moon. And I wouldn't have come up with that as a wrong answer in a million years.
Gosh. Next question.
Next one. You'll like this one, Royce, because I know you love your vexillology. And it is, how many stars feature on the flag of Panama? Is it 1, 2, or 4?
Monique, what do you reckon?
I think I know this one. It's 2.
You are right.
In each corner. Yeah.
Do you know the reasons for the colours?
I don't. Educate us.
What about you, Dad?
Not a Scooby. This one, I'm out. I actually put 1 star. I can't even remember what the Panamanian flag looks like.
Divided into 4, red and blue and white, and then there's stars on a diagonal line. Panama has a really strange history in that it's created by the United States because it wanted to build the Panama Canal. So it's red, white, and blue in honor of America. But then they also say that it's red, white, and blue because it's the two opposing political parties. It's a gerrymandered country with a flag of convenience because it's created by the United States. Next question, Claire Asprey.
Okay, which country shares a border with Argentina across the Perito Moreno Glacier? Bolivia, Brazil, or Chile?
Monique, what do you reckon?
Brazil, I don't know.
Dad?
Chile.
You are right, laddie.
There you go.
Up in the Andes. Next question, Miss Asprey.
Number 7. The Caspian Sea is larger than Germany. What proportion of all the lake water in the world does it hold? Is it A, 20-25%, B, 30-35%, or C, 40-45%?
Let's think about this logically. You've got the Great Lakes in North America, which we've just talked about. A big body of fresh water there. Caspian Sea is pretty big. It can't be 40%, can it? Is it that deep? Anyway, what do you reckon, laddie?
I said 20-25%.
It's actually 40-45%.
Wow. That's what I said.
Well done, Monique.
Monique, yes. Look at you.
Back in the game.
Next question.
Okay, and finally, what country would you find the ancient site of Angkor Wat? Is it A, Cambodia, B, Vietnam, or C, Laos?
Now, Monique, I'm going to give you the honour of answering this question because I've been on your social media and I know that you had big news to report from this kind of neck of the world. You're in Thailand, weren't you?
Oh, I got engaged. I forgot. I got engaged. Yes, I did get engaged in Thailand. Yeah, it was great. But I do know the answer. It's Cambodia.
It absolutely is. Now, I wasn't counting, Claire, how much the father and daughter duo actually got correct there. Were you? Were you totting?
I wasn't, but I'm not sensing like a top scoring round. Or maybe between them.
Dad, how many did you get, laddie?
2.
You got 2. Monique, how many did you get?
I don't know. I wasn't counting along.
You at least got 2. Host privilege. I'm going to give you 3. So you got 5. Maybe you got 5 together, right? Who was even counting? Now, we throw this out to the mass ranks of the Map Corner posse, who are all in full effect Nick Roworth is there, he's looking pensive. Ken McDonald's looking like Ken McDonald. Nina W. and family, you had three brains there. So if you haven't won this, shame on all three of you. Hello, Sergio. Hello, mate. How is Colombia today?
I'm in Italy.
Oh, well, of course you are. Dove in Italia, dove sei?
Torino.
Ronald, do you think you did well today?
Oh, wow.
That's a bit of a smug nod. Right. I'm going to take a point off that smugness of that nod, Ronald. I'm sorry, man. I can't have that. Right. People, if you're listening to the podcast, you missed out. You need to get on our Facebook group so you can actually see the smugness of Ronald's nod by joining us on Zoom. Right. Who got all eight? Seven. Nina and family. There's three of you. Come on now. Six. Oh, Sergio.
Hey,
Sergio. Sergio and Ronald. Do we need like a penalty shootout here? How does this work, Claire?
I didn't prepare a tie break.
Now, because Claire and I are both generous hosts, Nina and family, this is your first time on the Zoom, isn't it? Okay. How many did you actually get?
Four. We got four.
You know what? I think that's a winning score this month. I really do. Because we've had a wonderful audio postcard from Sergio and from Ronald before. Because in this three of you, and you knew you've won. How's it feel? Listen, no worries.
The prize for winning is that you have to do an audio postcard for our next month's recording.
There you go.
No pressure.
All you've got to do is just talk for about 3 minutes about a place that you love, and then I put the visuals together. So don't think that you have to do all the video stuff. Don't worry about that. Think about it between the three of you. Think about somewhere that you're passionate about and record a little voice note, ping it to me, royfield@gmail.com, and it will be on the next month's podcast. How does that feel?
We can do that.
Yeah.
Yes. Claire, what an episode this has been. I don't know about you, but I've been properly stoked. We're in the presence of like intrepid celebrity royalty, and we've had new Zoom alongers with us. Ken McDonald, it's always good to see him. Nick Roworth, who's my bete noir, we've had him on. Sergio has joined us from South America, from Torino. And we've had Ronald. What a show. Claire, it's probably our best. What do you reckon?
Oh, definitely.
There you go. So how do we end the podcast, Claire? You have to remind me.
I'm going to tell you a map fact of the month, and then it'll be time to fold up our maps.
Ooh.
My map fact of the month comes courtesy of old friend of the pod, Simon Koisemaker, who retweeted something. I have to say that when you follow the links and get into the Reddit debate, it gets a little bit complicated. What I liked about it was comparing data, which showed you that where the shipping lanes are, particularly across Asia, that's where lightning is as well. I thought that was really interesting. Lightning follows shipping lanes. And there are various theories on this. One is that it's something to do with the exhaust fumes coming from the boats, which then charge particles differently in the air that then makes lightning more likely. But then when you get into it, then there's people who say, actually, the shipping lanes in the places where the lightning's more likely to be and it's not causal. Anyway, I just like the idea that lightning follows ships, possibly because also they're metal. I don't know. Anyway, I love these maps where you get the unrelated things and they pan across each other and it makes you start to think about whether they're related as features. That was a particularly good one. I found that one on Twitter. So if you want to go back, I retweeted it on the hashtag Map Corner and you can find it there.
Tell you what else follows. I don't know about ships, but definitely boats. If you throw in fish off the end for the birds to come and swoop down. Seals. If you want to be blown away, there is an amazing video on TikTok. A man of my age should not be on TikTok, but you fall down a rabbit hole, don't you? There's a bloke, end of his boat, boat's like chugging along, and he's tossing out these bits of fish and these birds are swooping down. All of a sudden, the biggest seal you've ever seen in your life just comes out of nowhere and he's chowing down on these fish and then jumps up on deck. And that's when you see the size of this thing. why you don't see the size of these, and puts his head in the bucket and says, nah, you don't have to throw this stuff. I'm just going to eat it all. It's the most amazing video you've ever seen. Go Google seal, boat and fish, and you'll have lots of fun on TikTok. Just let it loop round. It's awesome. Claire, are we now folding up our maps?
We are going to fold up our maps.
There you go. There you go, folks. That's been your Map Corner with Laddie and Monique, ably assisted by myself, Claire, Nick, Kenneth, Nina and family, Sergio and Ronald. Take care. Look after yourselves. We'll see you all next month. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
ACAST powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.